Hey everybody, welcome to Myopia Movies. This week we are watching Jude Law and Robert Downey Jr. in a Guy Ritchie movie where they play Sherlock Holmes. Last week we dusted off the old episode Great Mouse Detective, and frankly, I hope you just loved it. I love that movie. I love this movie. It's funny, like, no one lets me have fun anymore with this show. They are all so serious about the opinions, but we have fun with this movie. But I think by the end you kind of get it. It sounds like a blast. It is a blast. And I imagine most of you have seen this one, and I promise one day we will do the sequel. But in the meantime, thanks for listening, thanks for subscribing, thanks for doing all you do, and just wanted to update you on what's next. Next week, in honor of the release of Black Panther 2, we are going to do a Marvel movie. We got Dan back on and Evan, and we're going to do the Punisher Warzone, which is completely different than anything else that Marvel has put out. So thank you for doing all you do. Thanks for sharing, and thanks for listening, and bye. Welcome to Myopia Movies. This week, we're talking Sherlock Holmes. We're doing Sherlock Holmes, 2009 Sherlock Holmes. Last week, you watched the Disney classic, The Great Mouse Detective. And so we're coming back with a little bit of, the real deal. And just like The Great Mouse Detective, this guy fucking fights. I'm Nick Hoffman, your host of Myopia Movies, and I'll panel with God.
Candace?
Oh, please.
No. I don't want to say anything else about myself. That's all I needed. Just Candace.
Like that. Just Candace.
I'm just Nor. I guess I'm just Charlie. I didn't know this was turning into an ASMR. I'm just Daniel.
Now you have to open a package of American cheese before we get it.
I want my ringtone to be Daniel going, "This is just Daniel."
I want you to record. Like just for sleeping purposes.
Would you ever answer another phone call?
Absolutely.
No, here's the thing. That would be your NPR show. This is just Daniel.
It's just Daniel.
We're talking right here.
Hey, how you doing?
We're keeping it right here.
Keep it real casual sexual here.
It's all Daniel all the time. Just Daniel. Just Daniel. Daniel Day-Lewis. We're going to have an interview with him today.
Daniel meets Daniel.
Daniel meets Daniel.
Daniel on Daniel Baldwin next week.
We're definitely Daniel Baldwin.
There's definitely Daniel Baldwin. That's it. So we did 2009 Sherlock Holmes. Obviously, I decided to schedule this because for the first time in almost a decade, there's talks of coming out with a sequel. And I don't know if it'll happen or not, but what's Guy Ritchie doing? So who knows?
Not making King Arthur.
That movie was dog
well,
shit.
I think he was slated to do like multiple movies. But after the first one came out, they were like, no, it's okay.
Well, but I don't want you to worry about Mr. Ritchie, because after directing that live-action Aladdin, which did so well, he's making a sequel that's coming out in 2025 to Aladdin.
Jesus Christ. You remember when Guy Ritchie actually went for broke when making a movie?
I mean, if you don't know who Guy Ritchie is, watch Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. That's kind of what
he's doing. Tells you everything you need to know.
Yeah.
Snatch was him, too?
Snatch was him, too. That was the follow-up.
The recent one was The Gentleman or something like that?
Yes. Have you seen The Gentleman?
Yes.
How would you think? I skipped it.
I haven't seen it.
It was a Guy Ritchie movie. And what was the one about, was it Chocolate Cake? He went with Daniel Craig.
I think I know what
not
you're talking
cake.
About.
It's like some moonshine, something to do with drugs, British people.
That wasn't him. I think you're talking about
there's
a movie called...
with about Daniel Craig and chocolate cake. Count him. Charlie, you joining me?
I'm there. I'm there.
I'm
two snacks in one.
Yes.
I think I'm mixing up.
That's our NPR show.
I'm mixing up two movies.
Yes. The movie is, in fact, called Layer Cake.
Layer Cake.
And it's directed by the same guy that later directed the Kingsman movies.
Matthew Vaughn.
Yes.
Okay.
Also, I will toss out in honor of the Mr. Craig. I kind of love these Knives Out movies. Whatever they're calling the series, there's another one coming out. I believe it like around Chris Mahanakwan.
I love his Louisiana accent.
Oh, that
very southern, southern
foghorn leghorn chicken fried nuts.
I do declare.
I mean, I'll just. I think they're making three more of those things, and they've already started making them, or two more. Beautiful. Last thing in 20.
The first one was great. The first one was. Did that win Best Original Screenplay at the Oscars? I know it was nominated.
It was nominated. I don't know if it won anything. I mean, it's a Netflix movie. I don't know if they're comfortable giving it awards.
The first one was.
No. I mean, the last Best Picture winner was a fucking Apple TV movie, which, let's be honest here, which has more prestige? Netflix, Apple TV. People actually watch Netflix.
What was the Apple TV? I couldn't even tell you.
It was the one where Will Smith slapped Chris Rock.
Yeah.
No. The winner. What was the name of the movie?
The movie's called Coda.
I mean, if it won the Academy Award for slap, I'd be there.
But... Coda?
Yeah, because it's something like that.
Oh,
it was
dude,
like
I saw one scene, which is amazing. You've got to watch it. Okay, do you know what Coda's about?
No.
It's a family that's all deaf except for one daughter who can hear. Like, it's a genetic thing.
Oh, okay. Yes, wait a minute. I do know this now.
Okay.
Oh, Coda. I thought you were saying Dakota.
I said Dakota. My bad.
Yeah,
okay. So there's this one scene where the parents are going at it like animals, and the girl who can hear has a friend over, and they're just like, it's a lot of awkward silence because they're just like, oh, yeah.
Not so much a friend as a gentleman caller, but yes.
I mean, you can smell it. Anyway, so Sherlock Holmes. This is,
you can smell this movie.
Just for context clues, the previous major movie that he had done, RDJ had done, was Iron Man. Iron Man was 2008, was the year before.
Will you classify that as his comeback film?
Oh,
because did he, prior to him being Iron Man, had he done anything else after getting arrested and all that shit?
The Shaggy Dog,
Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
No, well, to Candace's credit. It was Tropic Thunder.
God, he's so good.
It was Tropic Thunder, Iron Man.
Tropic Thunder came out a couple months after Iron Man.
It was in that same year. But this one came out during Iron Man 2, during that era. So it was like right after his rebound year. So he was still hot.
But what I was going to say for her, he had been doing good indie movies. I also think he's good in Zodiac.
Okay.
He's good in Good Night and Good Luck. He's good in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. But those are not big budget movies that make any money. This is the Charlie Bartlett lost money. This is where Iron Man brings him back. The problem with Robert Downey Jr. is every time he has a sniff of that, he ruins it. Because right after Iron Man, he does that The Soloist.
The Soloist.
Jamie Foxx. Where Jamie Foxx is a homeless man who can play violin. And the reason we talk about it now is because it was not good. Yeah. He also did
Due Date.
You've seen them all.
No, I'm telling you that. So that era where Downey Jr. Like Sherlock Holmes was when I was first collecting my DVDs, and I was a big RDJ fan.
Oh,
so, and he was hot for a minute. So I was following his career very closely, just because of a huge comeback. But though, speaking of which, I want to speak about his old movies. Was it School Days?
School Days
with Roger Dangerfield.
What?
I know it's a deep cut. But I was listening to something on YouTube. There was like, oh, Robert Downey Jr. was in Danger Days. So I checked that out, and he is hilarious. Mm. Granted, this was his coke days, but like the way he acted and everything like that was just really cool.
He's got So one of the things I love about Robert Downey Jr. is that he's got great physical comedy going on.
Chatham.
He's very much a Robin Williams type.
Yeah.
When it comes to comedy, he knows how to command the room and bring people into him.
And I'll tell you, he's really good at pauses.
Yes.
That is actually I would say it's funny because you think with a physical comedian, there's a lot of constant movement, and it's quite the opposite. He's really good at pausing his whole body, and the scene in order to create funny/tension. Then funny again, and then he starts as if he was in front of a live studio audience.
Well, but you bring a good point there in that it's not just the words that are pausing. He conveys that with his whole being.
Yes.
Well, and in this movie especially, it's a lot of him being right until he's not right, and then him fluttering his eyelids, right? And then, because the joke there is his facial expression, and the sheer raw sexual chemistry between him and Jude Law.
Has anyone else at the table seen Natural Born Killers?
Oh, yeah. Very good.
So Robert Downey Jr. in that is one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
Yep.
With that bad Australian accent. Actually, that movie's so over the top, it's hilarious.
The Fugitive 2. Fugitive 2?
That's a U.S. Marshal.
There's a sequel to that?
No, there is indeed.
There is a head, yeah. No.
They're hunting Denzel?
Wesley Snipes.
Hold on.
Bald Wesley.
What is your favorite Robert Downey Jr. movie?
It actually may be this one. Well, not this particular one, but the second one. When the Game of Shadows.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I love that movie. I think it's really clever. I think it's funny. It checks all the boxes. I like him in it. I love Marvel. I love the cinematic Marvel universe. Yeah. But, you know, I'm a diehard canon fan. And so I thought they did a very good job with the movies. But I got to tell you, I don't necessarily like fawn over the movies, and I don't really like Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man. I mean, he was a good choice, but I never liked Iron Man to begin with in the comic books.
Would you rather have Tom Cruise as Iron Man?
He probably would have been more appropriate, even though I hate Tom Cruise even more, so that would have been a no-go.
No one freaking liked Iron Man. The only Avenger people hated more than Iron Man was Hank Pym.
Ant-Man?
Oh.
You did like Paul Rudd? Oh, Michael Douglas?
Paul Rudd
was like amazing. Hank Pym in the Marvel comics.
I got
universe.
You talking comic book.
Well, yeah. during
which, to your credit, is why the Ant-Man movie doesn't feel like an Ant-Man comic.
Correct.
They made it a crime, like a heist film, which is fun. Because, like, and RDJ, to me, is, I like him as Tony Stark. Tony Snark. I said that on purpose. Because I just need to enunciate like an adult. Because he smells it. Like, he's just in it. And I think it's specifically that first movie. Because, like, to give it against Jeff Bridges, who's over the top, and he built it in the cave! And Robert Downey's just there with his cocktail, like, of course I did. Like, yeah. I just wish they had done the whole, where he's, like, fighting alcoholism, because... If anyone could pull that off,
it would be him. Yeah. Well, that's what made the character interesting. You know what? We're not talking about that.
Daniel, what is
your favorite RDJ?
Ooh.
I got to really Chaplin. Think about this.
Chaplin. Good Lord. Who likes that movie?
Yeah, he got an award.
He got nominated for Best Actor, which he gave a good performance, but that movie really isn't all that good. I'm going to say overall, like, his best performance or my personal favorite thing he's been in or what?
Yeah,
whatever.
He was great in Zodiac. I have a personal connection to Charlie Bartlett, so I have to shout that movie out. Back when I was in school, I was in the college paper, and when that movie came out, I got to interview the director of that movie.
All right.
So it's like, yeah.
Okay.
What about you, Norm?
Jessica Biel. No, I'm kidding. I was between Tropic Thunder and Due Date.
He's really good in Tropic Thunder.
Yeah. He's really.
I will say
it was very believable that he was an old, angry old black man. Which I'm just like, how deep did you? And I actually watched. I think we did Tropic Thunder.
We did.
About a year, two years ago. But no, just like that. It's funny as you mentioned him pausing and looking, and just there's a in that movie. There's like a scene where I'm just laughing at his face. Granted, it's blackface, but I'm just really laughing at his mannerisms around his face.
part of that is when he's explaining to the rapper what it means to be black.
400 years. What the fuck?
I mean, I will give an honorable mention to the Linklater film, A Scanner Darkly.
Oh, that was good.
But, I mean, it's not his. It's all rotoscope, so it's cell shading animation over people. But there's essentially a drug that's making people go crazy.
Right.
But you can't tell who's who because they wear these masks that change the face.
Right.
Anyway, it's an incredible Linklater film, but Keanu, I think, is technically the lead.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I will say, to wit, there are very few roles where I think Robert Downey needs to be the lead. Even in the Marvel movies, I think he's better as a supporting actor.
Correct.
Like, his role in Endgame is perfect, but if you added up all the minutes, it's maybe 10 minutes of screen time in a 3-hour movie. Right, I think that's where he's good, because you need some levity occasionally. He can give you levity, and him scratching himself in Scanner Darkly as he's going through it, fucking great. So let's talk about the movie we're actually here for today, Sherlock Holmes has to debate whether or not magic exists, and this is something Sherlock should never have to do.
I know you hated this movie, so...
No, I thought it was fine. It just, to me, doesn't feel like a Sherlock Holmes movie.
I think it's an amazing action-adventure movie, which is not a Sherlock Holmes story. Sherlock Holmes story is a mystery.
What is... So, y'all probably read the books.
I did.
Who is Sherlock Holmes? What is he? Who is he?
So Sherlock Holmes is the second smartest man in his own world because his brother is the smartest man.
Because his brother, yep.
So in real life, I wrote a paper on this.
Mycroft gives me life.
Right?
Right.
And in the sequel.
In the sequel, Stephen Fry is his brother.
Stephen Fry is amazing.
And I'm just like, why that movie is, as we know, I always love the topic of, what movies have a better sequel than the original? This is one of the categories.
Yeah. The only thing I don't like about the sequel is Moriarty dies too early.
Yeah.
He should have been through... Anyway, Arthur Conan Doyle, the real guy who wrote this, is a war vet, very much in the same way that Watson is, right? He went to Afghanistan, he got wounded, and he was a surgeon. But this is true. In the history of Britain, he's the first one to use medical evidence to get someone off of a murder charge.
Damn, OJ.
He was called in as an expert witness, just like OJ Simpson. Essentially, this guy was this big Indian guy who apparently had beaten someone severely to death using the wrong hand, and that the hand that would have been used, much like To Kill a Mockingbird, was somehow crippled. And so he got him off, saying that he literally physically could not have done it, using as a doctor, this is your medical science. And people were so blown away with it. He's like, well, what if we just use logic to make the first detective novel? At this point, Edgar Allan Poe had written The Murders of the Rue Morgue. But then, you know, Conan Doyle writes a series of what are essentially short stories in publications like magazines, and then creates one of the most iconic characters of all time.
What was the name of the detective in the Poe books?
I don't remember. And now I'm completely gone.
Sherlock Bones.
Okay.
Is that the different movie? Was I not supposed to watch that one?
Sherlock Bones. Sherlock Boned? Oh, I think I saw that, actually.
Were you in that chart? Just not get paid.
So this Sherlock.
Well, so, I mean, the idea of the Sherlock Holmes character is that he kind of knows everything, but he's incredibly... I mean, today we'd probably call him autistic. Like, he wrote a 10 or 20-page book on how different tobacco ash burns and how you can tell the differences. Like, he's not social. He's very uncomfortable and awkward around people. He wanted to learn a martial art, so he learned the ancient, I'm sure they called it Oriental, art of jujitsu. Like, it's just very awkward and elbowy. And then Watson is a doctor who befriends him kind of accidentally, and they're together. The sexual tension is actually in the books. Just here, it's Jude Law, so you're just like,
yeah,
ooh. It's natural.
I mean, But the important detail is that this movie is not an adaptation of any of the stories.
Correct.
This is brand new. This is fresh. This is a new take on the character and a new take on the stories.
I got you.
And
it's using some of the same people, including the inspector, the woman.
Irene,
the person who keeps the house, the fact that he's still at 221 Baker Street. You know, that's
Miss Hudson is also in it. Yeah. The dog is in it. And I guess to wit, something was in the water, because the next year is the Benedict Cumberbatch Sherlock show.
Correct. Which is better than this.
Which is amazing. And you want to talk about sexual tension? That fan fiction, girl. Y'all, listen.
Martin Freeman.
Do yourselves a favor.
There's a lot of fan fiction. No, I watched
Benedict Martin Freeman and Benedict Cumberbatch.
Martin Freeman.
But, like, if you've seen any of the Cumberbatch stuff, that's very Sherlock. Like, because he is almost, like, socially... The closest we get here is that dinner scene where he's like, and you were probably married at one point, and then she slaps him and pours the water. Because, like, he has no social cues.
Right.
Very much like Shots and, like, Sheldon.
Kind of. But, yeah, like...
You're in my spot.
My favorite Sherlock Holmes line from the books is, at one point, Watson explains to him heliocentrism, that the sun is at the center of the universe, or the solar system, and everything goes around it. And he goes, well, now that I know that, I hope to forget it, because it doesn't apply to the case, and every time I learn something new, it pushes something old out. That's what it is. Like, if it doesn't apply to what I'm doing...
That's how I feel about medicine. I can't learn anything else new, or some shit's gonna leave. I'm full. The end.
So, who wants to give us a plot synopsis? I know we've been talking for half an hour.
I'm going to say Daniel has his phone out with 257 pages of notes.
No, I actually didn't take notes for this one. I did for the next one, but...
Stop.
Okay, well, I can do it.
You do it, baby.
We enter the movie at the end of their previous case. There's a girl who's about to be sacrificed, and someone named Lord Blackwood is about to sacrifice her in some Illuminati nonsense. Okay, so Lord Blackwood is captured. I mean, and we get very early on that this is going to be a fucking fighting John Watson, right? And because of that, Blackwood is captured and he's supposed to be hanged. But by this point, it's like the end of the stories we know. And Watson's about to move out. Mm-hmm. Sherlock Holmes is not handling it well. He's been going on a cocaine bender, or they, as they put it, this is medicine for eye surgery. That's cocaine. Yeah.
I'm Dr. Sherlock Holmes, the rock and roll detective. I do cocaine.
Is that Mr. Poopy from South Park? No, it's Dr. Roxo from Metal Apocalypse.
Sound like Mr. Poopy from South Park. And all of your millennial fans are like, wee. Okay. And Watson is supposed to be the doctor who proves that he's dead. He proves that he's dead, but then immediately Blackwood starts showing back up. And so RDJ and Jude Law have one last case together as Sherlock Holmes is falling apart. That's right. So that's my plot summary. We can kind of walk through it however you guys want.
So where do we want to begin?
I mean, I've never seen a Sherlock to like a fake nose so much.
No. Well, he's a master of disguise in the books, isn't he?
I mean, yeah, and he has a lot of drunken friends that he knows down from the pub, right? Like, right. I mean, the thing about him is, like, he does know every taxi driver. He does know every fishwife. I mean,
well, the one thing I will appreciate that I think when we were speaking earlier that y'all disagreed was just, like, the over-the-top action and the way how he fights, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Because I think the action complements the cinematography, which is the when they're in that little boxing match brawl. Someone explained it to me, and I felt so dumb when the movie came out. He was like, you know, when you film, it's like each frame is a picture. And I'm like, what? Oh, but in that slow motion capture stuff like that, that's the kind of stuff that I appreciate. And like, you get through even the TV show with Benedict Cumberbatch, like, you see like his analysis that he goes to in his heads and like how he calculates shit and things like that.
I will say, you brought up the thing that in this movie is the most noticeable. Is him saying, like, here's how I'm going to beat the shit out of someone. And then it's like a punch to the solar plexus. And yeah. Like, especially we see it in the Irish bar brawl or whatever it goes. Mm-hmm. I think they call it the Irish boxing scene in the movie.
Yes, the Irish boxing scene.
But I just want it to matter in any way. Because otherwise we're just literally watching the same thing twice, right? Mm-hmm. And that lengthens the movie. Because he literally does it in slow motion. Then we see it in fast motion. I just wish, like, if you're going to do this as a plot device, maybe in the final fight that he does it in, he's wrong about a move. And the guy does a left hook instead of a right hook, and then he's on his back foot. But Sherlock Holmes is the smartest and greatest thing that's ever happened here.
Up to this point.
Yeah. But again, I don't hate this movie. I enjoyed this movie, but I'm here to be a critic, damn it. And no one cares, but I'm going to do it. And Candace is eventually going to remove the knife from under my knee.
That's true. So we're going in linear order from the synopsis you just gave. We open up with Irene Adler. So Irene Adler comes to the house, and Sherlock knows she's being intimidated by someone.
Or as her name should be, Sexy McSex Girl.
Yeah, it's Rachel McAdams.
Yeah,
yes.
It is.
And she looks great.
It is. She looks amazing. I really love her in the Netflix original Eurovision. It's possibly one of the sweetest, most adorable movies of all time. If you haven't watched it, watch it. It's good fun.
Is she in Mean Girls or 10 Things?
She's in Mean Girls.
Mean Girls.
And she's fine at this. She does Irene to the T. And guess what? Good on her for not pretending to do an English accent. She just goes straight.
No. Irene Adler was always American.
Oh, she was? Yeah. Okay, even better.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, and RDJ's English accent is just fine.
It's really good.
But you could come and go, cry! You could be Mrs. Lovitz in Sweeney Todd. And I love that movie, and it is pure camp, but she, like, Johnny Depp is from Kentucky. He needs to remember that sometimes. I am killing people. And you're just like, no, Sweeney. Hi, I'm good. We're fine. Everyone's fine. We're all fine.
Well, no, okay. I've listened to interviews. People actually do appreciate and like commend RDJ with his British accent, because it's not like over the top Cockneyan. Mm. It's not like, hey, someone just watched a bunch of like, I don't know, episodes of Downton Abbey and things like that.
He didn't Dick Van Dyke the accent, I believe, is what that's called.
Yeah, he didn't Mary Poppins shit. Oh. I will also say, he does a really good job. He's supposed to be strung out when Watson leaves him, and they glassy up his eyes. He acts a little bit awkward. Like, it's all in his physicality, but it's RDJ, and I love him. And the first time we see him sober up is to meet the fiance. And it's the greatest, it's the most awkward dinner since, I don't know, since Trump was elected. Like, it's a Thanksgiving after Trump. That's
the Sawyers and the Texas Chainsaw Massacre will be like, be less awkward at dinner, guys.
Exactly. So when Irene shows up, she's asking him to look for a missing man named Luke Rordian, which he doesn't really matter. But what matters about Luke is that we find him in the grave of Blackwood.
Oh, that's the, they use all sorts of un-PC terms here. That's the ginger midget. But it's important. This scene is important because as she's leaving, it's in the first scene when she asks him to do this, as she's leaving, she gets into the car with this strange man, right?
Yes.
Professor Moriarty.
Shadow.
Why you gotta spoil it?
I mean,
why you gotta spoil it?
It was so obvious.
So there was always going to be two movies with him being
in the Well,
I mean, it's like how at the end of Batman Begins, they teased the Joker, even though a sequel wasn't officially greenlit yet. It was just a little tease for the fans.
Here's the thing. If you're going to do Sherlock Holmes, you have to at least name drop Moriarty.
Because Moriarty is the big bad. He's the Joker. Like, again, this is 100 years before the Joker was created, almost.
Right.
You need that guy. You need Sherlock Holmes' equivalent,
yeah.
Right?
No, like, that's a very good point, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because remember, he's not a professor. He's a washout because no one can stand the asshole. His brother, on the other hand, is not only a doctor, he's professorial, and he works, in the House of Lords.
Yeah. Well, the difference is that he's Sherlock Holmes, but charming.
Yes.
Successful.
His brother.
And Moriarty is like the professor of pain. So, which also means that he has to do office hours. And just imagine going to college and being like, one moment, Julia. I have to help Noah with his research paper. I don't know. I did Johnny Depp. But here's the thing. He needs help. And if he does, I know the evil plan is coming, but he's mid-term.
You wouldn't see Sherlock Holmes doing that. He would just say, fuck off. I gotta
save
the world.
I'm experimenting with glow bugs.
Yeah.
Exactly. So
after they find Rordian's body in the tomb, they go to his office or hideout, and that's where you find that they're trying to merge science and magic.
Yeah, there's a lot of experiments going on. And they don't go into detail at this point,
no.
But they zone in on the pot of frogs and all these other things. Because this becomes important later on when Sherlock Holmes goes to explain how it all happened.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And who tries to torch the lab? Is it Blackwood's men?
Yes.
Yeah. They show up. They're trying to torch the lab.
That giant French dude.
Yeah. And during this time, Holmes is taken to the Temple of the Four Orders.
Okay. So I also want to emphasize, too, just for Candace's own, because she is driving the ship of state.
It's what I do.
She's
I am the power 45 bottom.
45 minutes into this movie.
Okay. That's
yeah, it's long a it long fucking
yeah, yeah, that's true.
I mean, because, like, the scene where he meets the wife takes 10 minutes for him to get wine dumped on, and then he still sits and eats his dinner.
It duck or fish he was eating? It was scaly.
It was duck, but it was cut like a fish.
But every scene, like, they go to 5 different places to investigate, and every time it's, like, 10, 15 minutes to investigate that and to deal with the fallout.
Yeah.
Well, and it's also, so for example, when we get to the scene where she was talking about where they're investigating the lab before everyone shows up, you have Sherlock Holmes, like, flailing around, opens this, like, fanny pack, takes out the picks to pick the lock, and then Watson just kicks the door in. Because it's also that, because we have to remember, it's a kind of funny movie, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we need John Watson to have no time for this all the time. And I love it, because the only thing that I take away from this, outside of it, is that I kind of like RDJ and Jude Law to work together again. Because the two of them together...
It was a different chemistry. Instead of being just always behind the eight ball, Dr. Watson was just like, you know what? I'm sick of your shit. I'm done with all this.
Do you think Jude Law auditioned to be Sherlock Holmes?
Oh, that would have been interesting.
Yeah, and then they gave it to the American. He was like, motherfucker.
Well, I'll tell you, I know he didn't. And I do know who they originally wanted as the primary Sherlock. Do you want to know?
Who's that?
Jack Black.
Could you imagine?
Are
you?
Well, yes,
I'm dead
can
serious because they wanted it to be a comedy.
And that
and they
later
wanted
got
Jude
made with
Law
Ferrell
to be the straight man. And they wanted Jack Black to be the
totally
funny one.
Different movie.
And then, of course, you have a very different dynamic with who they ended up getting.
Well, you know, there is a Sherlock Holmes movie that is intended to be super funny as Will Ferrell. And
I've seen it. It's awful, which makes me sad because I love the two of them. I mean, anyone who knows me, again, also Will Ferrell in the movie Eurovision, fantastic. It's one of those things that he's one of my favorite comedians of all time because he is the master of physical comedy because he's so unashamed of his body, which is not picturesque by American standards in any way. I mean, all I can think of is him walking in his American. After 9/11 to show patriotism.
That is
the greatest skit of all time.
Stifler.
And he's like, that legs up on the table, and I'm just like, his ball sack's hanging out. I'm like, damn, this guy is brilliant.
That is a patriotic ball sack.
It's the most patriotic ball sack ever.
It was previously in an American flag banana hammock. So.
Yeah.
This might just be for you. If you want to see a funny Sherlock Holmes movie, look up The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes' Smarter Brother, which is a Gene Wilder movie from the 70s.
Mm. I have not seen that.
Oh, no. Huh. It's Gene Wilder being...
Mycroft?
Mycroft.
I thought you were going to say the kids show when you were like, The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes.
But Marty Feldman is
a teenager. Homie. Remember that? The one?
I remember Sherlock Holmes, but that's a...
If you can find it, it's got Gene Wilder, Madeline Kahn, Marty Feldman, and Dom DeLuise.
What? How do I not know about this?
How do you not know a Madeline Kahn film?
I mean,
that's shocking.
What's the one that Millie Bobby Brown did? Eleanor Holmes?
Enola Holmes.
Enola Holmes.
Which
is that good?
The first one's fine. It's really good. And for, as a teacher, middle and high school students, it's great YA novel. Like, essentially, after the parents die, her and Mycroft and Sherlock are. You know, the older sibling.
Not really capable of taking care of her, and so...
And so she escapes, solves a mystery, and they're like...
You're fine.
You! And then there's like 12 other books. It's a YA novel, but you know what? Public domain, fucking great. Yeah. And it's Billy Bobby Brown, so anyway.
Billy Bobby Brown.
It's the Babysitter's Club Adventures.
Oh, for real?
You know, yeah.
So I've got a question for everyone at the table. Why has Sherlock Holmes endured for so long?
Because he's Sherlock.
Cocaine.
Yeah, right.
No,
I mean, why are people still making properties around the character as recently as, what was that, 2019, that show?
Because we don't like to change things. Let me introduce you to a fictional character named Jesus Christ.
Oh, boy.
Well, the same reason, we're gonna, the somebody's same reason getting that we've redone Arthur.
King Arthur.
Camelot. 10,000 times. Because,
the Terminator.
Yeah, there is.
One of the best movies 2 years ago was Sir Gawain and the Green Knight, which is from 800.
The Canterbury Tales.
Yeah, Night Tale. Night Tale's a great example of that.
Yeah, so.
Hocus Pocus. That happened 400 years ago, and no one survived.
The historical events of Hocus Pocus.
Right.
Yeah. I think what it is that it's a good recipe. It's easy to recreate. And people like the idea of strange, quirky people being the hero.
Oh, is that how Neil deGrasse Tyson keeps getting TV shows?
There's not a lot of originality anymore. I will agree with Daniel on that. There's always remakes and things like that. You have the same conversation every single 5 years. They're remaking this, doing that. You know, like I was watching Seinfeld, and they talk about going to the movies all the time. I don't know half the fucking movies they're talking about in the 90s.
Because you weren't born yet.
I wasn't born.
But I mean, let's take it to a slightly older female writer. There's Hercule Poirot movies that are back in theaters too.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Who, where?
The French detective.
Belgian. But it's the Murder on the Orient Express.
Because I'm Belgian.
I'm a Belgian citizen, so I've got to make it once.
I'm an American. You're all fucking safe. To us.
Well, we've got Dashiell Hammett. We don't give a shit about y'all.
The difference is the Belgians were tall.
Big socks.
What was the one that just came out? Death on the Nile.
But that was
she wrote like 20 of the books, and they're all good. If you haven't read an Agatha Christie, pick it up. You're done by the end of the flight. Like it's like less than 100 or less than 150.
And if you don't know who Agatha Christie is, watch the Doctor Who episode. It explains everything.
Yes. Yeah, actually, that's
pretty or if you want to cry, watch
except the giant bees, wasps. That doesn't exist.
Although in real life. She disappeared for like 10 days and then came back and didn't remember anything. So it's a good story. She
it's hilarious. That's what the Doctor Who episode is based on.
I know. I'm just saying.
Sounds like a good bender to me.
Creepypasta going.
Yeah. Creepypasta.
Okay, so it's mildly upsetting al dente. I don't know.
Thank you.
Eventually, because I'm here and rewatching as I'm watching and recording, we get introduced to the old men of the cult.
Yes.
The Home Secretary, the American Ambassador, and Grandpa Dubstep, or whatever he is.
Temple of the Four Orders. They're a secret magical fraternity, and they have considerable political influence.
And around here is also where Sherlock gets the line where he goes, "You know, Dr. Watson, we can't assume that magic isn't real." And Dr. Watson goes, "Yep." And I'm just like, what world are we in? Sherlock Holmes would be so mad if magic was real.
I mean, like Egyptians, but we're still not Egyptians.
Egyptians,
gypsies. We're still. They were like, "Oh, watch out for the gypsies because they think like that." You know, people
First of all, I would love to watch a Stephen King Sherlock Holmes movie because Stephen King.
Stay tuned
for dinner. We haven't done dinner.
Oh my god. A Quentin Tarantino Sherlock Holmes.
Well, that's pretty much this.
Feet. Muddy feet everywhere. Just everywhere.
Well, no. Quentin Tarantino.
Well, you know, speaking of Quentin Tarantino, that same year that this movie came out, 2009, Quentin released one of my favorite movies of all time.
Django?
Inglourious Bastards.
Now, you see, you're going to come back from America, and you're going to take that uniform off.
Well, I mean, Hans Landa's kind of a Sherlock figure. He's singularly obsessed. He's apparently the smartest guy in the room. I mean... The only difference is, you know, Landa's evil.
I will say, though, the idea that an American could beat up... Like, again, the closest secondary character I can think to Sherlock Holmes is a James Bond type, right?
Yeah.
And then the idea that Jimmy Bond! Like, you have, like, this redneck one-up him. So classy.
You mean, like, J.W. Pepper?
That's right.
What if Larry the Cable Guy?
Oh, cool! I'm going to solve the mystery of this hound that keeps killing your family. Cool.
So anyways, after we meet we go to this temple of the Order of the Fourth. They ask Holmes to stop Blackwood as well, because he's a former member of the society, and he's Sir Thomas's secret illegitimate son.
Ooh.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. So,
Which means he has a ticking clock above his head until when he
exactly. But we waste no time. That night, Sir Thomas drowns in his bath. Is Blackwood watches. Yeah. And the next night, Lord Coward calls a meeting to the Order, and he nominates Blackwood to take the command and take the place of Sir Thomas.
You know what a lot of the action scenes and scenes like that reminded me of? V for Vendetta. Just all of these...
Which also Thomas Fry.
Good.
Stephen Fry.
Well, it does.
Plot, trying to destroy Parliament.
Well, plus the whole thing where it's just a bunch of cranky old Englishmen doing something, and then suddenly there's an explosion and everything gets back on track. Except V for Vendetta, the movie at least, did it first.
I'll also just toss out here, somewhere around here, is when Irene Adler drugs him in like the Plaza Hotel, and then he wakes up, chained to the bed.
I mean, we've all been there, right?
And then some guy named Gerald comes on the TV and says, "Hello, I want to play a game." Gerald's game.
Would you like to play a game?
Parcheesi?
Chess?
Has anyone seen that movie on Netflix?
Saw.
Gerald's game?
Yeah.
No.
The Stephen King adaptation where the woman eventually cuts her skin off her arm.
Is that the mom from Spy Kids? Where like she had sex with this dude and he had a heart attack and she was chained up.
Yes.
And so she's just like, she cuts her own skin off?
At the end, yes.
Spoilers. But I do remember having sex and having a heart attack is probably my top three fear.
Yep. I saw on Reddit they sent a bunch of strippers to an old folks home and a woman died of a heart attack.
I mean, you dropped your parents off at a homeless, not homeless.
But Sherlock Holmes. Welcome to Sherlock Holmes. We'll figure out what's wrong with you, but you're making me feel real bad about it.
Well, I mean, the Claremont Lounge already has a day dedicated to that. Mitochondrial Infarction Mondays.
You know, mitochondrial and what Mondays?
Myocardial infarction is the name for a heart attack. Mm-hmm. One kind of heart attack, yeah.
A cardiac arrest was that?
Where Sherlock Holmes figures out how the old guy dies in the bathtub. And then he ends up puffing some like dust into the air and finds the secret passage, right?
And then he decides to like take all those magical instruments and try to recreate magic or something.
Electricity.
Fired.
Right.
Well, and he also does a crap ton of drugs and goes on sort of a vision quest, I guess.
I've been there.
He's to go to his mind palace.
Yes.
There you go.
We've all had to go into that state. That Jimmy Neutron thing space. Yeah, no.
That's
what we call the supply closet at work.
Also, around here is where Mark Strong proves that not only is he like kind of alive, but he's just walking around because he threatens to take over the whole cult, right?
Yeah.
And, you
is
know.
Is this where he lights that guy on fire?
Yes.
And we end up on a ship after Sherlock Holmes explains what it's like to have a vision quest to all of us, even though we've just seen him have one, because they have to do every scene twice in this movie.
Did we mention this is super long?
It's about 2 hours and 10 minutes.
It's a long movie.
Well, but here's the thing. It's the reason I think it feels long is it repeats itself so much. And like what the Sherlock show got right is save all the summarization till the very end. Right. Do it all at one go. Because every time he figures something out, we have a scene where he redoes it. And then every fight scene, he redoes it. And then every, like, planning scene, he redoes it twice. And so we have this, like, so even the boat scene where they're just, like, hanging around, which is a scene that just goes on and on and on and on. He knows every port and every waterway in London. Fantastic. Why do we have to spend time with someone who looks, well, like he belongs in the Lighthouse movie? But at this point, we're almost getting to the plot. We're halfway through the fucking movie.
That's another thing about this movie. The central mystery is kind of introduced at the beginning, but all the motivations behind it. I mean, if you want to make a good mystery, it needs to have a central hook. And it's just like, this guy faked his death. Okay, a lot of people did that back then.
I would have liked to see the mystery before.
Right. Why he's the worst person they've ever dealt with.
Right.
I mean, because like, eventually we get to the magic murder factory that is this like pig slaughterhouse thing.
Yeah.
And you're just like, well, I mean, you know it's a set piece the second they walk in, and Irene Adler's about to be cut in half. We'll get there. But, like, the movies, if you're going to do a Bond movie or an action movie, you spend all your time getting here. But they also have to slow down the exposition. So it just feels like it goes on and on. And again, spoiler, I'm probably going to recommend this movie, but this is where you make it more action-y. Like, you take 20 minutes off, you stop repeating yourself, and you make it punchier, so it's under 2 hours instead of over 2 hours, you have a better film here. Because the charm of RDJ's working. It's just like, you're just looking into a lot of long shots of people's eyes, watching people come in, goons come in, and then maybe Lord Blackwood's alive or not, and then the pigs get cut in half. It was
Doro's eyes.
That's what the second movie, as I think about it, that's what the second movie did right. They didn't make it repeat camping. I never disagreed with her. Yeah, but I'm realizing.
Do you feel guilty now just looking at her, shaking her head lightly?
I do. I really do. Thank you. As we talk about the pig factory, thank you for the sausage.
You're welcome. Plates that
was, it came directly from the set.
It's just great. But no, okay, for me, the cinematography, at least at that point, at that time, what was it, 2008, 2009, was revolutionary to me.
Looked good?
You know, it looked really good. It looked really good. And I think they just had a shit ton of money, and they just had to do it, like you said, over and over and over again.
I will say, the thing I like about Guy Ritchie still, a lot of practical stuff. There's real fire. Yeah. There's real blood. There's real, like you know what I mean? Because you could have done all of this in CGI, and he did. They do a lot in CGI, like the sky or whenever there's a flag on screen for some reason. But for the most part here, like, not that Irene Adler's in peril, but there's actually a body moving through a scene, and they're trying to deal with her, and they're actually using a bandsaw to cut a pig in half. And, like, you know, they use camera tricks rather than CGI, and this movie looks as good almost as it did, you know, what, 12 years ago, 13 years ago?
Yeah, it ages very well visually.
Yeah.
It is Robert Downey Jr.
Who's also aged fairly well. Yeah.
Which, I mean, like, okay, when did Jude Law pop off?
I was going to say earlier, but I forgot because we were drinking. Jude, more than RDJ's comeback, this is kind of Jude Law re-entering popular, because, you know, he had made some hits in the mid-90s and then taken a couple years off. So.
Well, a couple years before this, he was like in six movies in 1 year. It was insane.
Yeah, and but this is a blockbuster for both of them. And Robert Downey Jr. had done Iron Man, which was a blockbuster. Jude Law hadn't been in many, although now he's in, he was in Captain Marvel, I believe. Because RDJ just...
Well, and he also did the horrible Turf Woman stories.
Turf Woman.
Fantastic Beasts,
yes.
Yes, because Johnny Depp was fired, right? Did he replace Johnny
Depp? No, he's been in all three of them. I think he's Dumbledore.
He's Dumbledore.
He's right. Dumbledore. Who replaced Johnny Depp?
Mads Mikkelsen,
which was actually really good.
No, Mads is great.
He should have been in that role from the beginning. But anyway,
that actually worked. I just worked out because it was Colin Farrell.
Then
one of the Collins.
Then Johnny Depp, and then
just like the 80s with Corey's. There's just too many Collins. Hashtag too many Collins.
So no, maybe they get Johnny Depp back for that movie, or then get Robert Downey Jr. I just like that Jude Law had a wand, so.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, Jude Law is in one of my favorite movies of all time, and that's Gattaca.
Oh, he's so good at Gattaca.
That is such a good movie. And does there anybody... are so many times when I use the line, he didn't save anything for the swim back.
Does
and I think
else...
about that, and it just, it oof.
I need to rewatch it. I don't think I've seen it in 15 years.
It'll bother you just as much as it did then.
Does
it.
Anybody remember him as the sex robot in AI?
Yes.
Something Gigolo.
Gigolo Joe.
Gigolo Joe. Nothing like a movie about a child with a gigolo in it.
There's a movie with him and Forest Whitaker, Jude Law Forest, called The Repo Man.
Yeah.
Where they repo people's organs.
Which makes me really mad because it is a direct ripoff of Repo, the Genetic Opera.
Yes, it is.
Which is fantastic. Which is amazing. Love that movie.
Way, and Darren Bousman and Trevor, whatever his name is, went to the Paramount or whoever made Repo Man trying to sell their script, they lunged onto it. They got entangled in some kind of legal battle. They were able to retain the property and then made this movie underhandedly without them. I mean, it was a big deal because Darren talked to us all about it because I've actually met him a couple of times.
I remember reading the novel that movie's based on, and it's not good, but it was better than that stupid fucking movie.
My wife has met Jude Law.
How is she still with me? I'm kidding.
No, I mean, first of all, yes, also.
Out of left.
Hashtag hall pass.
Because when...
mine's Mark Wahlberg.
For you or for your girlfriend?
For me! I'm kidding. For me.
Contagion. She worked. My wife was was the CDC liaison for Contagion, and so when they filmed scenes at CDC, they filmed at CDC, and she was their liaison, and they invited her to the red carpet premiere, so she met everyone else. I think at the CDC it was only like Larry Fishburne and
Mark Wahlberg.
No, Winslet was there.
But
everyone else was elsewhere. So there's a picture of her with like
Matt Damon.
There's a picture with her with Matt Damon.
That's cool.
Who are you?
I didn't get to go to New York to see the premiere.
It was babysitting.
I was just
there. I was at home recording my opiate stuff.
Hey guys, I'm doing a sad cast right now. My Zenga page, my live journal.
One day.
All right.
And that's where we leave off.
Enough about Jude Law. We went down the Jude Law hole, and we just Got to get back down.
Yes, right. We did.
So now they're on the boat, and we've realized that they've been using like cyanide to kill people. That's how they've been doing this. They've been using like these air pressure things and blah 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 blah. And there ends up being this big fight, and they're on the incomplete tower ridge. My fair lady.
Well, this is where we learn what the overarching plot is. What is driving the villain? The villain wants to lock everyone into Parliament and release a gas and kill everyone so that Britain can move into the next golden age and take over America, which makes absolutely no freaking sense.
Which is, this movie comes out a decade after Wild Wild West. And if that movie proved to us you can't do that again, I don't know, right? Because that's the whole plot.
South did not rise.
Somewhere around here, after Kenneth Branagh tries to sell America or whatever.
RIP to the Queen, since we're talking about.
That's right.
London.
This is.
Sorry.
No, you're fine. I was listening to you try to walk yourself out of that sentence.
I can't. I had a whole Reddit argument about the Queen the other day. My head hurts from it. Yeah.
So, any subsequent Bond movie will be the first time since even the books, they'll have to say His Majesty's Secret Service. She's been Queen since before the first book was published. That's how long it is, since 1953. Wow. Anyway, what is it going to bring up? Around here somewhere, Jude Law kicks a grenade, and we end up blowing up everything. And this is where he goes on his vision quest, finally. And he's like, wait a minute, magic isn't real because I'm Sherlock Holmes. And so now then we start to explain the plot. And around here, Lestrade pretends to arrest him.
Yes.
And this is what ends the movie. Because we forget, we kind of mentioned this, but one of the villains in the cult is the Home Secretary, which is like the Secretary for Domestic Affairs for Britain. So like, it's a big deal. Like, he's in charge of the whole police force, etc. And so Lestrade, playing along, is trusting Sherlock. And the one thing I didn't like, and maybe I'm just a purist, I wanted more of him and Lestrade. I like the relationship generally. And so the fact that he suddenly Lestrade sides with Sherlock, the whole previous relationship had been so negative, I don't know why Lestrade would have. But it works here. It's kind of a trick. It's, speaking of Batman we mentioned earlier, this very much reminds me of like Commissioner Gordon pretending to die. Like, this is inherent trust here, which was the year before, so who knows if there are rewrites. But Sherlock tricks him with smoke by closing the flue. And this is where we have the biological weapon.
That's right.
Anthrax.
Yeah, exactly. Close enough. And, Blackwood's supporters have all already been secretly given the antidote.
Right.
So they were in there too, but they're not worried about it because they know. It'll be fine.
Just to get back to the old way. It's a good source for a villain. I'll say that. Who was the actor that actually played the villain?
Mark Strong.
Holy shit. I mean, my favorite, he plays a good villain. Because he has a villain face.
Well, I was watching this with my wife, and I was like, his face is practically a special effect. Because it's just those jaw bones. It's that look. Yeah. He looks evil. And it works, and it works great. And spoiler alert, as you hear this now, we've already done Green Lantern. But it's the same thing when he plays Sinestro. He just look. You're like, let's just give him pointy ears and, like, Spock's eyebrows. You're just like, oh, you know what? He could be evil. He doesn't even have to say anything. And they give him a leather duster here, which makes him extra evil. Or a leather daddy.
Leather daddy.
So the fact that Lord Blackwood is still alive makes people think that, that he has returned from the dead. So there's cult stuff. And Sherlock Holmes, grasping Watson's chest, looks through a spyglass. And we realize that we have a chemical weapon that looks like it came out of an H.G. Wells wet dream. Mm-hmm. Then a bunch of white people are going to die, and everyone's kind of okay with it. But
they're politicians.
Not just politicians, but back then they were all royalty. The House of Lords.
This is the House of Lords, so it's a bunch of like.
Better even worse.
I mean, I'm not mad.
My blood doesn't clot.
I'm not mad when people who incest die to keep. No, hold on. I'm saying this totally wrong. I wouldn't be mad if people who kept their wealth would force incest to keep their wealth shy. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, let's work on this again.
I think
sentence structure.
Sentence people who die, who keep people who commit incest.
Just say eat the rich.
Eat the rich. Move on. Eat the rich.
This must I've said incest way too many times. When I speak Spanish, people, this is exactly how it must sound. The sentence you just gave us. Well, yeah. It's like all the words are right.
Well, I guess I get away with it saying that English is my first language, but really it is.
Okay.
I got out of like middle school Spanish because of that.
Okay.
And I got in trouble with that. So yeah, whenever I fumble my English, I just say it wasn't my first language.
I also like here in Movie Town. Other than once again we meet the French like bodybuilder for like the fourth time, Lord Blackwood's like, I will be the king. Or may God strike the rest of you down. And he's just standing around waiting for the bomb to go off.
Waiting for the bomb. And it's like, nothing's happening.
Fuck.
By the way, remote control bomb.
Which is the most important thing, right? For Sherlock. Mm-hmm. So, as people who care about like con culture and stuff, does this count as steampunk?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
That I like.
I mean, it's officially steampunk if you have goggles and you never put them on your face. If you only keep them on your head.
Except we do get a scene with Sherlock with the goggles on his face.
Yeah, so it puts on his face. So that gives him actually negative points in the steampunk community, but we'll still allow it.
I do like the chemical bomb that has, like, a spitty bit. Like, that's classy. Although I will say, if this is steampunk, this is fine. That Three Musketeers with the blimps, that's terrible. You don't need to go to, like, Renaissance France with dirigibles. This is good. And it's almost like
it's Wild West.
It's Wild West. It's
Victorian Wild Wild West.
Fire. And they're building the bridge. We have a fight on a scaffold. We're all there.
All we need is a giant spider.
Could you imagine if that showed up?
Giant mechanical spider.
A practical spider?
Yes, somebody actually built a giant mechanical spider specifically for Wild Wild West.
And I roll into them. Going
have
straight.
You seen, have you seen the music video? Alfonso Vivero's in it.
That's the best part. I've seen the movie too.
It's Carlton,
the best
dude.
Part was the music video for the song.
Yes.
Okay, so
that's a Patreon exclusive.
We have a fight on a bridge that's mostly completed.
We do.
Yes. Well, it's important to note that Irene disabled the device.
Right.
Yes. She ran away with the chemical, thinking that that was going to be a way to keep everyone safe. She's right. Sherlock follows her. They have this, you know, touching scene. And then Blackwood shows up and they start to fight.
That's right. And, you know, and then we get the 10-minute long parlor scene where he explains how he did everything.
It's the monologue. You got to have the monologue.
Smarter than you monologue.
Revealing all how he deduced all of Blackwood's supposed supernatural feats and how they are merely works of science and trickery.
Yeah, and
is it real?
And we don't get a lot at the end why anything happens, because supposedly Moriarty is behind it, kind of, but also he pays Irene Adler to get Sherlock Holmes involved.
Well, no, I don't think he's behind it. He knows it's happening, but he sets into a sequence of events to happen so that he can end up with the wireless remote aspect of the bomb. He wanted that piece. So when everyone was up on top of the bridge fighting, he went and removed that from the bomb. And why? We don't know.
If you thought Thanos showing up constantly was stupid, that's the dumbest thing ever. Because it would be more interesting if just go ahead and keep stealing from Bond. It was like a Blofeld thing. And they were like, he's one of my acolytes. He's doing this plot, which I endorse. But if it's that, oh, he has a good idea. I'm going to steal parts of it for the sequel. That's kind of stupid.
That was my takeaway.
You may be right. I was just so confused because at the end, I'm like, why was he getting Sherlock to stop someone he was involved with? But whatever. We should also mention, the D plot of all of this is that Watson wants to, get engaged. Like, it's just...
Yeah.
And so there's a ring thing back and forth, And when they're finally about, they're engaged and they're about to move out, they want to tell Sherlock, he's hanged himself, but it's to figure out how Lord Blackwell pulled off the fake hanging. And instead, they just let him hang there. What I can only imagine is for sexual purposes. Because he's just, they're just describing it and they're just watching him hang. It's very strange.
It's the world's worst roommate. Can you imagine Sherlock Holmes as your roommate?
It would be terrible.
It'd be terrible.
He shoots his initials into the wall with a revolver at one
point. All right, Sherlock Holmes as a roommate or Jeffrey Dahmer as a neighbor?
I'd take Jeff Dahmer as a neighbor because he didn't mess with the neighbors. I mean, I'm sure his apartment smelled like shit.
Also, he went after the young gay men, and I'm old, so there you go.
That's right. Be safe. I'm too old for him.
And just so y'all know, the key component that Moriarty was so interested in is based on the infant science of radio.
That's right.
Dun, dun, dun.
And Sherlock goes like, well, this is brilliant. And you're just like, thanks, guys.
Whoever has this can make millions.
Yeah.
Why make millions when we can make thousands?
Exactly.
And then at the end, Commissioner Gordon says, I have this card with a Joker on it. And then it smashes the credits.
Yeah.
I don't know. So what do you feel, Daniel?
I like the movie. I don't think I'll ever watch it again necessarily unless it's like on or somebody wants to watch it. It's perfectly fine. I kind of like how they flipped the Sherlock Holmes tropes upside down and made Holmes look like he did. Instead of having the pipe and everything, he just looked like this random, dirty eccentric, which is what he was.
Yeah.
But overall, I like the TV show with Benedict Cumberbatch in it. I think that took the ideas in this film and did it better. Check that out first. If you're a big Robert Downey Jr. fan, which apparently Nora is talking about the stages of his career, then this is a must watch. But otherwise...
So if you are a fan of Sherlock Holmes and you will be bothered by inaccurate representations of Sherlock Holmes, do not watch this movie. This is a amazing action-adventure movie. It has no real feel of pacing, and you can't really tell where the movie's at any given time. So it's a beautiful movie to set and run in the background.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful movie. The cinematography is great. The choreography is spectacular. Fight scenes, love every single one of them. Practical effects out the wazoo. Great movie. Love it.
If you have 2.5 hours, love British accents, Jude Law, and Robert Downey Jr., watch this movie. If you like grungy, medieval, whatever, not medieval, it's like, what's this based
on? 1890s.
Victorian, before the Industrial Revolution, or during the Industrial Revolution, watch this movie.
I did not teach you history very well.
No, you didn't. But hey, I'm 30.
That's fine.
And I made it. I really enjoyed the movie because it was a revival. It was my, during my era, it was the modern era of retelling of Sherlock Holmes before Benedict Cumberbatch. And that was like you had to have BBC to like watch that. And I mean, I guess that came out on Netflix maybe a few years later after that, but I really enjoyed this movie. It gave me more Robert Downey Jr., especially since Iron Man.
I would say that this movie's definitely a watch for me. The sequel will always win my heart more so than this one. I think it's the pacing is better on it. I think the storytelling's better. And I think the addition of his brother adds a very homely quality to it. And so technically you need to watch this one to really get all the goodness out of the second one, because it does call back to things about Irene Adler and stuff like that. And if you didn't watch this movie, you wouldn't get the references. So I think you should watch it. That way you can enjoy the second one, which is superb.
So, kind of put this. This movie came out in 2009 on, like, I think Christmas, like, literally Christmas Day.
Obama era. Yeah.
Well, but, like, for me, it's not just, I mean, Obama's America. But it's also, this is like an ass magnet. If it's on TV, you're just going to sit down and watch it. And like, it's also... It's not a Christmas movie, but it's perfect for a Christmas release movie because, like, you put this on when the family's over or whatever, it's fine. Like, people will be engaged. If, you know, it gets boring, you go get another slice of pie and you come back. Nothing wrong with it. It's engaging. And when it gets going, it gets going. And when it's not, if it was on TV, it'd probably take 2.5-3 hours because of all the commercial breaks. I had fun watching it. I hadn't dusted it off in forever. And when people asked me what I was doing this weekend for the show, and I said it was this, they were like, oh, that was fun. I'm like, it's not a great movie, but it's definitely fun.
And just as a reminder, it did win the Academy Award for Best Music Score. Hans Zimmer did it.
Yeah.
It was a fun
It's good.
Score.
It's a great score.
And I think, he kept saying cinematography. It looks good.
It looks
the set dressing was good. The camera was in the right place. It looked fine. And Guy Ritchie directs a very specific kind of movie.
Yeah.
But if you like it, this literally was the kind of movie he does. There's not a lot of fancy stuff here. But when you have Robert Downey Jr., he's kind of the special effect. And right. The relationship between him and Jude Law is great. It's great. Anyway, we released this because it was around Thanksgiving. I mean, it's November. We wanted to do big kind of fun movies that you can watch with the whole family. But we're throwing that out the window. We were looking for a Marvel movie to do because we wanted to do a Marvel movie because next week, unfortunately, is Black Panther without Chadwick Boseman.
Is it next week?
Oh.
As we're releasing. I'm sorry.
You're in the future. Daniel, cut this out. I've got confused.
No, it's okay.
No.
What's happening now is happening now.
What?
But we're releasing this in November.
What year?
Who's the president? When will now be?
Who's the president? Who's the president?
The corpse of Joe. No. So
the kid from the corn video.
We're dusting off a Marvel movie with some friends of the show called Punisher Warzone.
Oh,
we're doing Punisher.
Bad one.
The
boring one.
As if there's a good one. I don't know why there's a good one.
The first Punisher movie was way better than Warzone.
Oh, and just for those of you at home, I've teased this for months.
Y'all can see Dan.
Nora, after the recording's done, you and me, we need
to
talk.
We need to talk
about a couple things.
And anyway, so after this. We've been teasing it for months, but we're finally going to release Adam's Family Values because Tim Burton finally fucking decided to tell us that for Thanksgiving weekend, he's releasing the new Wednesday show. So Adam's Family Value will come out the week of Thanksgiving. Thanks for listening. Thanks for doing everything you do to keep us on the charts globally. And we're out. Thanks.
Bye.
Season 9 of Myopia Movies is produced by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Suttis. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman and stars Daniel Suttis and Matt Quinn. The theme music is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod of Incomtech.com and is licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and review us wherever podcasts are found. Thanks, guys.